You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about most. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, it's Veterans Day. We'll reflect upon that and hear from one of the military's finest. Plus, he was known as Mr. Hockey, and for good reason, we'll learn all about the new biography about, it's an autobiography, in fact, about Gordie Howe. Let's meet the friends. Keeping it real in a superficial, self-absorbed world, it's Aaron Myers.
A department store is sending the wrong message to girls with a Christmas wish list that many are finding inappropriate. I'll tell you what it says.
And keeping this rockin' ship afloat, it's Jay Campidonia.
A 650-pound tiger shark has lunch and grosses out a group of fishermen. I'll explain.
And looking for something healthy in every story about human failure, here's Chris Martin.
Phil, football fans may have noticed that all of the big games have pretty much turned into big blowouts. So the boys announcing the Monday night game last night were prepared to kill a little time. I'll explain.
Oh, yeah. So smooth, Chris. Thank you very much. And thanks for tuning in on this Veterans Day. Thank you to all the veterans listening right now. I wish there was something I could do for you other than just give you a great show today. I think that's the best I can do, right?
Well, yeah, we're entertaining them. That's what we do here.
That's right. You know, at the hockey game the other night, it was military night.
Oh, cool.
On Sunday night, filled with military personnel, and that we were collecting food and all that sort of thing. And I thought one of the more interesting things that we were doing that night at the game, the power players, the ice girls.
Oh, yes.
They do a bikini calendar every year.
They do.
And for every calendar that was purchased that night, the team would donate a calendar and send it overseas to...
Oh, how cool.
It's men in uniform.
I like
or
that.
Women, for that matter.
That's very good. Mm-hmm. Is there guys in this calendar?
No.
Good.
Mm-mm.
They need to do a hockey guy one, too. I'd buy that one.
Hockey guy
mm-hmm.
calendar?
Yes. You as know. Long as they make sure they have their teeth when they're doing it.
Yeah.
Then I'm
dentures,
I'm in.
You mean,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, no. You know, I think we're going to talk a little hockey later in the program, but I've always thought that it would be good to have a big charity soccer game featuring hockey players. Because before all the hockey games, the players are down in the basement area, you know, where the Zambonis come out, and they're warming up with soccer balls. They're doing headers. They're doing whatever they can to keep the ball from hitting the floor. That's the game that they play.
Do they use their sticks?
No. They use their heads and their feet and
so
all
like
that.
So like real soccer.
They're amazing soccer players, and I think it would just be great to have a big charity soccer game with hockey players.
You're influential. Get that thing going.
Why
and
not?
Then we can announce it, and it would be great. We could do the halftime show.
And we can order extra yellow cards.
Yes, absolutely.
You'll
just
probably
everybody.
Need them with hockey players.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think so.
Watch, though. There's like a clause in their contract where they're not allowed to go out there and do that because they could snap an ankle
yes.
or something.
Oh, yeah.
Injuries.
Right.
Good point.
Like they can't go Moto X
off
or something
season.
Like that on the weekends, right?
Right? Yeah.
All right. Let's get things started, shall we? Aaron, we're going to begin with you and... come on, what has gotten into kids and all the merchandising and all this? I mean, Santa has enough to worry about, but the meaning of Christmas is pretty much out the door, isn't it?
Yeah, especially in Dillard's, apparently. I guess they're sending the wrong message to girls, and they say it's an accident, but in a Florida department store, a mom, she posted a picture of a sign that she saw in the girls section. She put it on Facebook, and apparently this is what the sign says. It says, "Dear Santa, this year please give me a big fat bank account and a slim body. Please don't mix those up like you did last year. Thanks."
Wow.
So
what's
pretty much you
that?
Want to be skinny and rich if you're a little 7-year-old girl, I guess, is what
mix
they're saying.
What does she mean, mix them up last year? She got fat and broke?
Apparently, yes.
Sounds like it, Phil.
So they said this was an accident, and they removed all the signs, but people weren't very happy about it because that's not a good message for young girls to see.
That's ridiculous.
No, is it puppies and like kittens and
okay, but
toys.
I have a question. Is it a sign that I can go and purchase, or is it a sign that's just in the toy section that the store put up?
It's actually in the photo that I have. It shows little outfits for little girls, and there's the sign right in front of one of the mannequins that says, you know, "Dear Santa." So,
oh, yeah.
not the most appropriate.
Jay, I'm thinking the way you are, that maybe it was just something fun that you could purchase and put
right.
up in your house.
Like a novelty item.
Yeah.
And that's all it is, lady, so take a chill pill.
They just need to put it in the novelty item department instead of where the little girls walk in and like, why do I want to be skinny and
next
have
to
lots of money?
Next to the Barbies.
I have an answer for that, but
they shouldn't know that at 7 and 8 years old.
Just saying.
What's your answer?
I don't want to get into it at the moment.
Okay.
Wait 10 years and you'll figure it out.
Yeah. Or grow up and get a job with Calvin Klein. Isn't that right, Aaron?
Yeah, Calvin Klein also a little wrong message sending right now. They have a new campaign called Perfectly Fit, and they hired 27-year-old model Myla Dalbesio, I think. And she's a size 10, and they're having her represent the plus size category, which, one, plus size apparently doesn't even start till size 12, and then, two, the average size of women is 14. So you see a picture of her, and she's skinny and beautiful, and, you know, so people are like, that's not plus
but
size.
But she's not a 7.
Well, right. Models, like the skinny, tiny catwalk models,
like,
are usually like
7.
Zeros and twos.
Oh, zeros and twos.
Yes, those are their sample sizes. And they're scrawny.
Grody. Yeah, I don't like it.
This is a beautiful, healthy-looking woman, and people are kind of like, well, you know, if that's plus size, then what am I?
Yeah, gigantic.
You don't want your lady to crumble like a cracker when you roll over, right?
Right. Exactly. That's very true. See, I don't like that. And they walk like a skeleton, you know, like their shoulders are protruding.
Well,
and
I've had a model.
I don't like the size 0-2s.
Yeah, I've had a model faint on me before in a segment I was doing, and she was skinny, teeny, tiny thing, and literally walking down with a dress on, and boom.
Did you catch her?
No, I looked and went, oh my God, this is not happening on live television. This is not happening on live television.
On camera. You caught it on camera, though.
On camera.
Okay. Yeah. Is it on YouTube? Because I'd love to see it.
I think so, but she just ate the floor. And she was fine. We checked on her. She was okay, but she had like a banana afterwards and got back up.
I was going to say her first round meal of the day.
Yeah, right?
Pretty much.
The week.
Yeah. All right, so we've talked several times on this program over the course of the year or so that we've been doing this program about this kid who I promised to never fly with. He's had some tremendous bad luck. He's lost everybody in his family.
Yeah.
But we continue to follow his saga because he does aspire to live on and do great things, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he's really shown people that he's got perseverance and he's fought really hard. His name's Austin Hatch, and he survived 2 plane crashes, one that took his mom and 2 of his siblings, and then just a few years ago, another one that took his dad and his stepmom.
And he was in both planes.
Yes, he was in both planes and injured. He had massive like head injuries and broken bones, and he was actually in a coma for 8 weeks. Well, after he came out of the coma, he went to physical therapy, and he is a basketball player, loves basketball. Well, he worked his way back up and has played for high school. He's now at college, and he actually just scored his first point on Monday with University of Michigan. They put him in the game the last minute 41, and with 12 seconds left, he shot a free throw, and it went in. And so
he got a point.
Got a point, standing ovation, hugs from the team and his coach, and just a nice moment for him.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you wouldn't fly with this guy, Phil?
No.
Why not?
Because the odds are bad.
But don't you think that, like, he's a good luck charm? Like, if he's sitting next to me, I'm buying lottery tickets.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That guy's the luckiest man on the face of the planet.
Yes, of course. But you guys go down, and you die, he rolls over awake, grabs your lottery ticket, and he's rich.
And he wins,
all right,
yes.
I never thought of that. All right.
I see the logic you were going with, but it didn't work on that one.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Now, who knows how many people are just fish bait right now.
I know. It's
with
disgusting.
All the folks that fall off of boats and fishermen who get lost at sea and all of that. And what happens to them, Jay?
Well, we're sitting here at the L.A. Harbor. That's where we do the show. So if you're listening to us live, I'm literally sitting here looking at a giant body of water. I don't want to know, and I don't want to guess how many bodies are floating in there or body parts are floating in there. Well, a bunch of guys out in the Philippines off the coast of the Camiguin Islands, or something to that effect, they reeled in a 650-pound tiger shark. That is a monster.
And tiger sharks they're known to attack humans.
Right. And they will eat just about anything. They're kind of like the garbage disposal of the sea, if you will. Well, they got this fish, if you will, on board, and they cut it open, and they say, hopefully you're not eating. They found a partially digested human head and human leg inside the fish. Can you believe that?
And this is in the South China Sea? Is that what that is?
Or it's the off Pacific? The Philippines, off the coast of the Philippines.
It's one of the two. Okay. It's the Pacific or the South China. Okay.
So, wherever the Camiguin Islands are, I have no idea. I'm not a geography major, so Moving on. Now, it turns out that they didn't want to have bad luck on their ship, okay? So they decided to keep the shark's jaws and fins and then threw the rest, including the human remains, back into the water.
Oh, great. Oh, so now we'll never find out who it is.
Yeah.
Well,
wow.
Some of the locals over there say that it might have been two of the people who are still missing from a ferry that sank in September.
Oh, that's so sad. So a family could have known who that was, maybe if they had kept them, and now nobody's going to know.
Correct.
They're not finding their family members.
Correct. So the ferry that went down was carrying 84 people, and there's still two males who are outstanding, if you will. And the story doesn't say if the human remains, if they knew that it was a male or a female or whatnot, but yeah, so...
Could be hard to tell when you're sitting in a shark's stomach. So.
Well, yeah, it says partially digested human head. I mean,
And then they're just like, we don't want this bad juju on the ship. Get it out of here.
Get it out of here. They said they couldn't stand the smell first. So
makes sense.
Yeah.
Well,
that makes you want to sail the open seas.
Thank you. Huh? Yeah. That was a very pleasant one.
Thank you for sharing that, Jay.
I thought it was fascinating that a human shark could do that. A human shark. A shark could eat a human like that.
Wait, what did I just miss? Did you discover something?
a human shark.
Those exist, just not in the ocean.
They do.
Oh, boy. Last night, Monday Night Football, the Carolina Panthers ran right into a blender. And coming up next, Chris is going to tell you what you can do with that blender here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Thanks for tuning in. It's Veterans Day. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil. Aaron, Jay, and Chris are here. And as we continue, it was quite a blowout on Monday Night Football last night, Chris. And sometimes when the game's not all that exciting, you got to find something to do to occupy your time, don't you?
You do. You have to find a way to kill time. You got to fill it somehow. And there's been nothing prime about primetime football lately. I mean, there was a game on Sunday night, and my family's a big Packer family. They love the Green Bay Packers. It was 42-0 at halftime.
Yeah.
They, like, broke records by smashing in the Bears, you know?
Wow.
But last night, the Eagles versus the Panthers, it was pretty well a blowout, too, 42-21, and it wasn't even that close. So Mike Tirico and John Gruden, the announcers for ESPN, they were prepared. They had a blender in the studio, Phil.
Oh,
so
a
they
blender.
Yeah, and they spent the last 9 minutes of the segment making a smoothie, making a protein smoothie, putting a banana
that's
in
funny.
There.
It was hilarious.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would have been making margaritas, but that's funny.
Right. They were saying that Chip Kelly, who's the coach of the Eagles, that's what he forces his team to drink every day. But he put grapes in there on the vine. He didn't even remove the vine.
Oh, well, that's roughage.
Yeah.
His Gruden protein powder. And
you know, Gruden is the best NFL commentator on television.
One of them. He's up there, man. I like Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. Those guys do a good job together.
You're talking to a Dallas Cowboys fan, and Troy Aikman is the greatest quarterback to ever live. But
all right.
John Gruden is so to the point when he talks about these guys. And he talks about the players because he's been there. He's lived it. He's won a Super Bowl. He's just like, look, you're being dumb. You're being smart. I like this. I don't like that. That's what I like about him. Instead of just talking about the game, he really injects his opinion, and he's right on the money 90% of the time.
And he doesn't hold anything back. He's almost like the Charles Barkley of football, only better spoken.
Right.
You know?
It all makes sense.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
It was terrible.
But the blender segment was hilarious last night.
And so did they ultimately drink the smoothies?
Yeah, I think he forced Mike Tirico to drink it.
Yeah, why not? It's healthy. Yeah.
Grapevines and all.
Yeah.
Hey, if you make it, you don't want to waste it.
You get a little bit of that fiber in your system, and everything's good.
That's right. Keep you regular.
Yeah, that's for sure. New research, while we're on the sports theme here, new research shows that NBA referees who are shorter than 6 feet tall called 3.6% more fouls than taller refs did from the years 2008 to 2012.
Why is that?
Well, the researchers say there are two possible reasons. One, their stature somehow allows them to see more of what's going on between the players.
Oh.
Or, and I think this is the more plausible explanation, they may be exhibiting, quote, aggressive, controlling behavior because of the Napoleon complex.
Oh, get out of here.
Or short man syndrome.
That's ridiculous.
I love that.
Yeah, in other words, the refs are overcompensating because they feel inferior.
Wow.
No.
I'm going with that one because I think that's
really
fun.
Now, of course, the other possibility, it could be one random coincidence. After all, it's not a significant margin, 3.6%. But as one person pointed out, this means the average player would have just one more foul called against him every 480 minutes or roughly every 15 to 20 games. So statistically, it's not a great deal. But
but you can get kicked out of the league for having too many fouls. So over the course of a season,
right,
where they play 82 games?
Yeah.
You can – that's four more fouls. That four more fouls may kick you, get you suspended.
Well, if they're flagrant fouls or technicals. These are just regular.
Oh, really? Oh, just regular fouls.
Regular fouls.
Oh, okay.
Do they classify what a shorter ref is? Because standing next to
under
a basketball player – oh, under 6 feet.
Yeah.
That's what you said. Okay. Yeah.
Well, that's totally short then.
Right.
No, I'm just kidding.
By the way, this was brought
really
to
not
the attention of the league, and the NBA shrugged it off, calling the findings limited – and arbitrary.
And ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah, that is very funny, though.
That falls under the too much time on your hands again type thing.
Right.
Lakers
yes
won their first game this weekend, by the way.
Oh, finally.
That's celebration
that
time.
Out there.
Yes, we should. Let's get Kobe on the phone.
Okay, good. Yeah, ring him up. Mike's got him on speed dial.
He'll be angry man, too, I think.
Anybody in the NBA, are they growing beards with this whole Movember thing, Aaron? Have you been keeping track of that?
You know what? Don't know.
I know
I have
the
not
hockey
been
players.
Track.
The hockey players
are always,
Yeah.
James Harden sports a pretty mean beard.
Does he?
Yeah, for the Rockets.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
and in fact, the guys on like Matt Lauer and what's the weather guy's name?
Al Roker.
They're growing beards
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Well, this is the month to do it. So if you're going to grow a beard, this is your time.
I decided not to this year.
Yeah.
You got a little facial hair going on.
Yeah,
but not full beard.
It's coming off tomorrow. I mean, my wife's not a fan of facial hair, first of all.
No, I remember you saying when the Ducks made the playoffs, you were going to grow a playoff beard.
Yes, I did.
And she hated it.
She did. She was rooting for the Ducks to lose.
Yes. She really doesn't like
that's
beards
funny
then, yeah.
So that she could get my baby butt smooth cheeks back.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure lots of girls prefer that.
But what I don't get is it's tough growing a beard. If you're not a regular beard farmer, you don't know what the rules are to growing a good beard.
No, you don't. But I do have some pointers. Not that I'm the best expert for this, as I'm a girl, and I really don't have the capabilities of growing a beard.
Yeah, well,
but
we've seen you on bad days. Don't worry about it.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm just saying. It happens to everybody. Don't worry about it. Oh,
wow. Yes, my facial hair. But anyway, on that note, here's what it takes to grow a beard. Have patience, because it can take some time.
Yes, that's for sure.
Except that it's going to be itchy. Can mm-hmm feel like cactus poking your skin, which for the guy and if they have a significant other. So they say to brush it to keep it in the same direction. Oh. Wash it because it's
just
gross.
Sounds like a lot of work already.
It does,
yes. Soften it with beard oil, I guess.
Beard oil. They
make
have that?
Make it soft for your girlfriend or your wife.
How about some of that paraffin wax? Can you rub that on your face?
What about just conditioner in the shower?
That too. It says wash it, so that's, maybe condition to keep it all nice and soft.
Yeah.
Avoid hard lines, so you shouldn't end it at your chin. Let it grow down on your neck and make it not even all the time. And then it can help shape your face, so trim tighter on the cheeks and help define your jawline.
Is it okay to let it kind of meld and braid in with your chest hairs?
That would be kind of cool and maybe a Guinness Book World Record there.
Let me give you one other one, too, because my uncle has a friend in Arizona. We go four-wheeling. Dude's got an epic beard, and he told me, here's how you grow the thickest, longest beard possible. You have to shave it, and then you actually reverse shave up against the grain. So you get it so tight, you get it almost all the way down to the root of the hair, and then it will grow back thicker and longer.
That's like with girls' legs now.
Yeah, and he says you got to do that for like 2 months. Reverse shave it so tight to your skin.
Yeah, but what happens if you've got curly hair and it starts? People start calling you, you know, pubic chin.
It's the way it is, man.
It's not going to work
for you.
Do you
live like on a school playground, Phil?
Yes.
Do that.
Come on.
And so it's a bunch of young kids.
I know you are, but what am I?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on.
Well, you know what? What are you going to do anymore? Because kids are sheltered just the same from every kind of bad thing. Parents don't want their kids to see anything bad, so they take them to a place where they think it's safe. The dollar store, and they look at toys that only cost a dollar. What could go wrong, Jay?
Well, an Ohio mother has an issue with a dollar store out in Dayton, if you know where that is, because she bought her kid a princess wand, if you will. Well, turns out it was not a princess wand when she removed a piece of foil that was on the top of the wand to make it shiny and pretty. There was a picture of a girl cutting herself.
Oh.
And this isn't just a one-off. This is an actual product. She bought her kid a princess wand, at least she thought. She bought her kid what was called the evil stick. And it makes like a haunting noise, like a haunting laugh. And it's got this ugly, ugly picture underneath the foil. So she's outraged because the evil stick was right next to the Barbie dolls and the Hot Wheels and the kids' toys. She wants it removed from the store. The guy who owns the store says, hey, look, you bought your kid an evil stick. Not my problem.
What do you expect?
Yes. Not my problem.
Was there is there a better aisle in the dollar store where they could put the evil stick?
Well, see, I was thinking like the Halloween decorations, something to that effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, a toy called the evil stick for a kid. That makes no sense.
Right.
Really.
So take it up with the people who make it.
Wiccan supplies, maybe? Do they have that in the dollar store?
for a dollar.
That's in the seasonal items.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to talk about one of the greatest hockey players who ever lived coming up next with one of the greatest sportscasters who ever lived, who I've ever known. Let's put it that way. That's next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. All right, it's Phil Hewlett and Friends. Thanks for checking back in. At this segment, we're going to talk a little hockey. Haven't done that in a while, guys. In fact, I think the last time we seriously talked hockey was during the playoffs of last season. But we're going to go way back to the 1940s.
They made ice back then?
Yes, they made ice. What's the matter with you?
What was it like back then?
What was it like? The guys used to eat pucks during the game. They didn't wear helmets. The goalies were required to stand up. They weren't allowed to kneel down.
How was it when you were announcing games back then?
Yeah, it was tough because I hadn't learned the language yet.
There weren't microphones
either. You just had a bullhorn?
No, I think I had a binky.
Yeah, a binky?
Isn't that a blanket?
No.
That little kids
hold?
It's my binky.
What's the matter with you guys?
No, it's a pacifier.
Can we get serious for a second? Because joining us live is a serious guy. He likes to have some fun, too, but he's a sports reporter, host of the podcast Ted Sobel's Excellent Sports Adventure, available at sportsusamedia.com. Ted Sobel, nice to talk with you again, buddy. It's been a couple of weeks at least.
Yeah, at least. Good to talk to you guys, too. And I'll tell you what, I loved hockey in the 40s. I went to every game.
Gordie Howe, Hall of Famer, long, illustrious career. That's who we're talking about in this conversation, Ted. Remind us why Mr. Hockey, as he's known, stands out in hockey history.
Well, he stands out in hockey history because he's there's only one guy in the history of the game where they say it's a Gordie Howe hat trick because it's a goal, assist, and a fight. So, look, he's one of the all-time great players. He's one of the all-time great guys, not just in hockey. I mean that. I've had so many dealings with him, and he's just as humble as you get. And the great thing about him is he is two totally different people because when he played, he was the meanest SOB who ever lived.
Yeah, and that's what the fans like.
Yeah, exactly, but off the ice, you would not see an ounce of that. And I'm not even talking about your typical, hey, this guy was a goon and he's a nice guy off the ice. I mean, this guy is so gentle and so real, and you just love to talk to him, and he has a new autobiography out.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about that some more in a moment, but just a little more perspective, just looking up his record, 25 years with the Red Wings, or seasons, I should say, then a handful of years in the minor league. at the end of that run with the Red Wings. And then he came back to the NHL. I think he played for the Hartford Whalers, if I have it right.
But he was not in the minor leagues. He was in the WHA.
Which was
the other major league. So he was never in the minor league.
Right. So an alternate league, just the same. And then he came back, played for the Hartford Whalers, and then he had another 40-plus point season. Pretty amazing. That's 29 years in professional hockey.
Yeah, well, the thing about my podcast is I speak to both of his sons, Mark and Marty Howe, who all played with him on both Hartford at the end of his career and in the WHA with the Houston Aeros. And it's amazing their stories and how they just absolutely love playing with their father, and that the fact that he came out of retirement just to play with his kids and not only was good enough to still play, he was the best player in the WHA, which had players like Bobby Hull and you name it. I mean, they had tons of really good guys who just went for the money to go to the WHA instead of stay in the NHL. And he was the best player in the league in his late 40s.
Yeah, just amazing. And you don't see a player like that anymore with that kind of longevity, and especially when he's a boom-boom kind of player, too, because those guys get beaten up pretty good, and they tend to shorten the length of their career. So it's when you have that perspective on it, it's just amazing to understand how in the world can a guy play for so long. He's, what, 86 now?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. All right, and so tell us more about this.
Recently, too, so he's not doing well, and he's trying to recover from that.
Okay, and so tell us about this autobiography. Who's involved with it, and what do you know about it so far?
Well, involved is mostly his son, Marty. He's the one who came up with the idea, and he wanted to really give a tribute to his father towards the end of his life here, where he gives him his due and maybe some stories that people didn't know about him. I haven't read the book yet because it just came out literally, and Mark is sending me a copy. But it's from the excerpts that I've read, there are some stories in there that are just not as well known, and it's also from a family standpoint. So there are a lot of things regarding the family and how, if you'll pardon the pun, how the family itself dealt with playing with each other in two leagues.
Well, that's an interesting story, I bet, to think about. I mean, imagine the pressure. You're Gordie Howe's son, and you're a hockey player as well. How do you measure up?
Yeah, it's not easy. And I'll tell you what, Mark has a book that came out last year, and we talked a little bit about that in the podcast as well. Sort of ironic, within a year apart of each other. Mark is a very private guy, doesn't like talking about these kinds of things. And he said it took 6 months for the writer to talk him into doing a book about himself, which is called Mark Howe, Gordie's Son. And he's had to live with that his whole life.
Yeah.
But he said it was really easy because his mother was a great influence. Obviously, when your dad is not only just a superstar, but if he played for 25 years, he's not home a lot during the year. So your mother is a huge influence in your life. And she just made sure that there was none of this, you're Gordie Howe's son, so you're going to be specially treated.
Yeah.
And they dealt with it very, very well.
Now, you kid about going to hockey games in the 1940s, but but you've been in and around the sport for several decades. And did you ever get a chance to see Gordie play competitively?
Yes. Yeah. I saw him play several times. I started going to Kings games the end of the first season of the expansion, which was 67-68. So I saw Gordie play a handful of times at the Forum in the old days, and it was great. I mean, it was almost like Babe Ruth coming into the building because he was that big. And even though it was getting towards the end of his playing days, at least as far as we thought, he ended up playing more after that. Oh yeah, I saw him play several times, and he was amazing because he was one of these guys. And the thing that I didn't know as much that Mark told me, he was not ever really a fighter. You know, that Gordie Howe hat trick thing is sort of a joke, and in the podcast I say really what you should say is the Gordie Howe hat trick is a goal, an assist, and an elbow.
Yeah.
Because that's what he was famous for. He made sure that his elbow, and by the way, if Gordie played today, he'd probably be in prison.
Right. I know. The rules have changed so much you can't play Gordie Howe style.
But the way Gordie played then, he made sure he got his space. And he was so strong, like an ox, but never, ever lifted weights or just naturally strong. And I tell you a quick story that I was in Toronto, surprised Mark at his Hall of Fame induction back in, I think it was 2011. and the whole family was there, and it was really great to hang out with those guys, including Gordy, who was suffering a little bit of dementia at the time, but he was really sharp that day. He was well-rested and sort of the old Gordy that we like to hang around with, and we took a family picture together. And Gordy stuck his elbow in my face like he tends to do sometimes. But his dementia, I think, was kicking in, and he actually elbowed me really hard. I thought my jaw was going to come out.
Wow.
And it was hilarious timing, because the guy who took the picture got it just as the elbow hit me in the mouth, just before I opened my mouth, like, wow. Hey, Gordy, you know, you almost killed me.
Yeah, a cherished moment right there.
And it turns out that Marty told me, he says, Dad never did know his strength. He would do things like he would pull him by his ears as a kid, and he says to this day he thinks he has bad hearing in one of his ears because of that.
That's funny. So he was farm strong, and that's something I think people see all the time in some of these kids, farmers who grew up to be hockey players. Do you think some of the modern kids, because they're a couple decades removed, but they're most of them are students of the game and the history of the game. Do they still tip their hats to Gordie Howe?
Yeah, no question. I think there are a few guys that will always be that way. The Rocket Richards, the Gordie Howes, the Bobby Hulls, the Bobby Orrs, and the Terry Sawchucks. Those kinds of guys are so legendary that they just rise above the top of everybody else. But Gordie is right there amongst the all-time greats. And I'll tell you, he's so revered that Bobby Orr and Wayne Gretzky wrote in the book the foreword and the back page for this autobiography.
How about that? And what's the name of the autobiography?
It's called Gordie Howe, My Story.
Mr. Hockey, My Story? Mr. Hockey, My Story, Gordie Howe. All right. It's as we speak, it is being placed in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com, so people can either order it or purchase it. I don't know if it's available today, but there you go. It's there. And Ted Sobel, thank you so much for bringing it to our attention. And we want everybody to go to sportsusamedia.com. We put that link in our links page as well, and check out Ted Sobel's, what is it called again? Your Ted Sobel's Excellent Sports Adventure. The podcast. It's great to listen to you.
Yeah, and remember, I speak to both Marty and Mark Howe in the podcast. It's about 30 minutes each, a phoner, just talking about the old times and the writing of their book.
And it's good stuff. Ted, great to talk with you, my friend.
All right, see you soon.
All right, so long.
Do you think Wild Stallions plays his intro?
Maybe.
I wonder that.
It could. Could be.
That was kind of a funny story about Gordie Howe having a flashback and nailing Ted right
there. Yeah, right. And Ted's knocking him in the jaw.
Yeah, that hurt.
We should have just asked Ted to get us the photo so we could
post
it.
Poor guy. It's like,
I'll send him a note. See if I can post that photo.
Don't mess with him like that. He's Gordie Howe.
Yeah. I was looking at a list, too, Phil, of the best players to play hockey over 40 in the NHL. You want to take a guess at the other two? There's three at the top of the list.
Over 40?
Yeah. 40 or over.
Teemu Selänne.
That's number three.
Okay. And, I know who it is. And he's...
I can give you a hint if you want. He's barely older than Gordie Howe.
But he's active, though, right?
Is he? No.
No.
He's got to be retired based on his birth date.
No. All right. Don't know.
You would hope. Right?
Johnny Busick?
Johnny Busick.
Busick.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
How
he's
old
number
is he?
Two.
So well, he'd be 87?
He played into his 40s. Yeah, he was born in 1935. So
still active.
Wow.
Come here. Yeah. Come here.
Strap up.
He's a tough one.
Right. These are the kind of guys you can send off into space and drop them on an asteroid.
Yeah.
And we're going to hear about that sort of thing happening next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. Thanks for listening. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. As we continue here, we have so much to talk about, as usual. And the things that they're doing in space these days, Chris, it's pretty remarkable. And what's happening right now with this, what's it called, the Rosetta Stone or something?
The Rosetta, yeah, the Rosetta Rover, Rosetta Spacecraft Rover. I don't know if they're naming it after the language teaching.
Probably not.
Program.
But they're going to land this thing on a big stone.
They are. They're going to land it on a 2.5 mile wide comet tomorrow. Wow. Actually, technically, this morning.
What,
late tonight.
Like Armageddon style? Like the movie?
Armageddon style. Well, actually, what they're going to do, Jay, they're going to try their first soft landing. So all these other comets that they've tried to land on with these spacecrafts, and they're like the size of a washing machine.
Yeah.
They've basically just crash-landed these objects into the spacecraft and then gathered whatever information they can. But this time, they've actually spent a couple of weeks circling around it, trying to find the best spot to get in there and land where they don't end up in a crater or, you know, against a glacier.
Wow.
And, yeah, and the coolest part about it is they're going to be televising it. So, more great television news.
What?
They're going to be live-streaming it. And the Europeans apparently launched this spacecraft, this little Rosetta.
So there's got to be like a camera pod following it, or how does
like
that
got
work?
A GoPro
attached,
on it?
Attached yeah. to it, yeah.
Yeah, they're all attached to
with
it.
One of those selfie wands?
Yeah.
No, the selfie brush. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Jinx.
And it's a dual screen, too, so you get the you get all the people at European NASA Command Center, so you know when they do that, you know, they all celebrate when it touches
of course,
down.
Yeah.
You'll get that view, too. And it takes 28 minutes, almost a half an hour, for the broadcast feed from the spacecraft to reach back here to Earth because it's 310 million miles away from here.
When does this start? When is this going to be broadcast?
It starts tonight. It starts at 12 o'clock, and then they're gonna be filming it for the next 7 hours. They call it 7 hours of terror.
Seven hours of terror?
Yeah, because if they smash it into a rock against the comet, then the robot dies.
Yeah, it's over.
Poor robot.
Yeah.
And what do they do? Are they going to have blenders ready to go in case they accidentally they need to fill?
That'll be the show after.
More they need
smoothies.
To fill the rest of the 7 hours?
More smoothies. Yep. You know what? Last week was our last week with Michael Schrago, our movie reviewer, because he went off to get a nice big job with the Smithsonian or something like that. I forgot what it was.
Whatever.
Yeah, something hoity.
Something very high profile.
Hoity and toity at
some
the same time.
Some group that watches movies nobody else does and then talks bad about other movies.
So we're flailing to get you the information that you need about movies. And the next time you're looking for a movie to watch, forget Netflix, forget recommendations from reviewers. Ask the Church of Satan.
What?
They know their stuff.
Yes, because believe it or not, they actually have a list of recommended
films.
Wait,
how would you know they know their stuff?
I have my ways. That's all I'm saying.
She's, you know.
I've been going to a dark place lately.
Oh, my. Have you joined a coven?
No, but that would be fun.
Oh, my.
You are
I can
weird.
Have the evil wand or evil stick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The evil stick.
I'm pretty sure we did a background check on her, didn't we?
I think you forgot.
Yeah. Anyway, here's the recommendation, again, from the Church of Satan. It includes some of the obvious choices, like Rosemary's Baby, The Wicker Man, and Brotherhood of Satan. But then there are the less obvious choices.
Like Bambi.
Listen to this. Citizen Kane, Key Largo, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and Disney's Fantasia.
Fantasia is a good one to watch on drugs.
Yeah, that one creeps me out, actually, a little bit.
And there is a big demonic character in Fantasia, too.
Right.
So, what gives? Anyway, it helps to understand that people who belong to the Church of Satan don't actually believe in Satan. They're atheists, and this is according to their website. They just use the devil as a symbol of pride, liberty, and individualism.
Yeah, how's that working out?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's what I think of with pride, devil.
Who's the big demonic character in Willy Wonka Chocolate Factory.
Willy Wonka, the main dude.
He is?
Yeah. Kind of creepy, too, a little bit.
He's a child molester. The Gene Wilder character? He's like a total satanic child molester.
I had no idea.
Watch it with that perspective and see if I'm wrong.
Well, now you're going to ruin it for me.
Just look at how Gene Wilder looks at those little kids.
No, I see what you're saying, but he's not like the devil. The kids make their own mistakes.
Watch it again and see if you find the marble altar and the chalice full of blood in the background.
No.
Right.
They say it's chocolate.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
It probably is.
Yes.
Hey, can I throw a quick movie review at you?
Oh, you've got one?
I watched Edge of Tomorrow. this weekend with Tom Cruise, and I can't remember the female actress's name in it, but really good film. It sort of bombed at the box office because there was some other stuff out. But
what's it about?
It's about Tom Cruise. He goes to battle to save our planet from aliens, and he gets to reset the day. So every time he dies, he has to start over, almost Groundhog Day-like. Oh. And he does such an incredible job, and he dies in the most crazy ways. Really good film.
So it's all about do-overs.
Yeah. It's do-over after do-over after do-over, and it's real well put together, well acted. It was good.
How about that?
Interesting.
So there you go.
Movie reviews.
Non-demonic. Well, it is kind of demonic, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, of course, today's Veterans Day, and we're going to talk to an active duty guy in our second hour. But the big fight out there today, Jay, for our military, the new fight is with this group, ISIS, or whatever the heck they're being called these days. But there's a new kerfuffle that's not even militarily related.
Yeah, and it really depends on who you ask. It's either ISIS or ISIL or ISIL or whatever. But anyways, the White House says it 17 different ways, whatever.
Or IS.
A bunch of bad guys over in the Middle East.
Exactly.
Can we all agree with
brutally
that?
Brutally bad guys.
Right. Well, evidently, yes, kerfuffle would be the word. Red Bull is catching some heat because it looks like the Islamic terrorists are using this Red Bull, drinking the Red Bull, before they're going into action. How they're getting it. Now, this is really interesting. Turkish trade statistics published, okay, that Turkey has been shipping goods into Syria, including truckloads of Red Bull.
Directly to ISIS? Is it being – wait. Are they getting in between the supply line
stealing
and grabbing it
it
themselves?
Bingo.
That's
the deal. So what's happening is – so Red Bull's a company. They ship all over the world just like any other company does. So they're sending their ships to Turkey. Turkey is trying to bring them into Syria. In between there, somehow, some way, the ISIS bad guys are going over there and stealing – the convoy, if you will, or taking over the convoy, and then they've got just pallets upon pallets of Red Bull. So Red Bull's catching some flack from people in the United States saying, stop sending your product over there because now we're helping give the terrorists an edge.
Oh, yeah.
All that extra energy.
Well, yeah. Have you ever had one of those things?
I have them every weekend.
Makes your teeth hurt.
At like 2:30 in the morning.
Next thing you know, they're going to be launching what they think are flying machines off of the end of piers.
Yeah, right?
Yes.
Well, off a sand dune, I guess.
Yes.
Right. There's not that many piers over there.
This ought to fly.
Try
that's
it.
Actually not
what is that called? The flugel?
Flutentagen.
What?
Flutentagen?
Is that what it's called?
Flutentag. Hold on. Google machine.
Look it up.
Red Bull Flute. No, that's the bad word.
Flugtag. It's the greatest competition ever. It's like taking a soapbox car and running it off a ramp into a lake.
Yeah.
They usually don't go very far, right?
Flugtag.
Very nice. You almost need a Red Bull to say that without cracking yourself up.
Yeah, right.
Hey, that's it for hour one of the program. There's so much more to come, including on this Veterans Day, we'll talk with an active duty soldier who is deeply involved in the war on terror. We'll get his perspective on today's battlefield. Plus, when you talk about a guy like that who's clearly a tough dude, right? You don't want to cross a guy like that. But you don't want to cross the Girl Scouts either. Wait till you hear this story from our lovely Aaron over here coming up next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about most. You'll hear from the experts, authors, others, and we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. This hour, here's a question for you. Are we treating our veterans with the kind of respect and honor they deserve for their sacrifices? We'll speak with a career soldier, get his perspective on that, and a whole lot more on this Veterans Day. And it won't be long before robots take over the world. We have expert perspective on that. It may actually be the case before you're gone. You'll be answering to a robot. Hey, the friends are here. They're all human. Aaron Myers, Jay Campidonia, Chris Martin. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for tuning in. Let's get things started with you, Aaron. When we talk about what's happening on Veterans Day, of course, all the people in the armed forces, they are just tough men and women, and you don't want to be on the wrong side of the battle.
No, you don't. That's you don't mess with that.
That's for sure. But who knew that Girl Scouts were so tough?
I did not, but I can understand why you need to protect Girl Scout cookies, because if someone took mine, I would probably fight back too, just saying, especially those caramely chocolate ones. Those are delicious. Well, in Maryland, I guess there was these little girls. They were out selling cookies with their wagon. That is when a teenage guy came up and grabbed the wagon and ran off and took it to try to take it to a getaway vehicle.
A getaway vehicle.
Oh, and he was running down the street with the wagon.
That's fantastic.
The Girl Scouts looked like easy marks to
this
guy?
They were 12 and 13. The guy was, I think, 17, 18. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's like, oh, cookies. Got him. Well, not so much. One of the girls literally chased him down and grabbed the wagon back. And he got so scared that she fought back that he just dropped the wagon, got in the car, and took off, and somebody followed them, so they ended up getting arrested.
Oh, wow.
But the cookies were safe, the girls were safe, and now they're my new heroes. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. There you go.
All right, who's taking bets? They were high at the time they did it.
The teenage guys?
Oh, correct. The teenagers,
okay. Yeah, driving by, it's like, dude, I'm so loaded. Let's go get some Doritos. Hold on. Red wagon full of cookies.
Thin Mints.
Let me out, dude.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Right. I hope they have a merit badge for that.
They should get one. I mean,
for kicking ass?
Yes.
Yes. They saved cookies. Girl Scout cookies, what, once a year? I mean, come on.
Good for them.
Yes,
go
that
Girl
is brave.
Scouts. That
very
is.
Very brave.
Right. That's even braver than helping grandma across the street. Well, that's what Boy Scouts do.
Yeah.
All right. Here's something else nice that somebody's doing. This is a guy in Australia. Tell us about them.
Yeah,
that guy.
He might be another hero, too. He has been, for the last 2 years, he designed and built his own version of the Batmobile, and it was the specific one used in the 1989 Tim Burton-directed one. So even apparently has, like, that after flame burner thing. And
yeah,
it's street legal, though.
That's the cool one. That's the one that looks like a vet, like a stingray vet.
Right. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So very cool, and it's actually street legal. So
wait,
instead
what's
of just
the thing on the back again?
Like, okay, let me see. Flaming afterburner is actually the proper
okay.
term for that. A flaming afterburner. Oh.
It's such a girl. Okay.
Great band from the 80s, by the way.
It looks cool.
Right?
The car's
the flaming
cool.
afterburner, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, it looks cool, the car. And he's not just, you know, driving around thinking he's, you know, a stud in his Batmobile. He's actually teamed up with Make-A-Wish Foundation, and he goes and he visits terminally ill kids, mm-hmm. and he dresses up as Batman, and he takes them on rides in the car.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Very sweet.
It's only a matter of days before he gets a cease and desist letter from Warner Brothers.
Oh, come on.
I hope they don't do that. He's doing something good with his cool
You think
Batmobile.
They would spoil that, even though he's like hooked up with Make-A-Wish?
It's
He'll the, put an end to
it's
that?
It's their brand. They own it.
Oh, that sucks.
They'll have their attorney send the letter. And
you know what?
That
they should license
don't give them
him
ideas.
To do that. Instead of cease and desist, be like, hey, look, we don't want any money, but then the company could write it off. They should license him, allow him to do it.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's a good idea.
Right, because
doing
there's no good.
Good
press release out of going after the guy.
No.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
They'll
and then they should have him go around to Los Angeles so we can ride in it.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
See?
So we can see what an afterburner can do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
A flaming one, especially.
Yes.
Well, you know, those are kind of souped up Corvettes, right? And what happens if you actually have a Corvette and you upset your ex?
You don't want to do that if you live in Philadelphia, because apparently a man's going through divorce, you know, with his wife, and he got very upset with her. So he took her red Corvette and drove it into a river.
Oh, yes.
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 It was a little scary at first because police thought maybe there was somebody inside it. So they had to, you know, tow the vehicle out. And turns out that nobody was in there. And he just was upset with his soon-to-be ex-wife. And they said he probably won't face charges because they had joint custody of the car. But apparently it sounds like she really liked it. And that was to punish her.
Yeah. Good.
So, Jay's having a chalk one up for the dudes moment over there,
exactly,
aren't you?
Absolutely. Right. They get everything, right?
Yeah.
Traditionally. Now, I'm not saying I'm not going to make a general blanket statement, but traditionally, the man is the breadwinner. The man paid for it. The man pays for everything. She gets the house plus the car plus the kids. I don't think so. Good for you, dude.
Aww.
I'll let you in on a little math here, Jay.
Yes.
I mean, Chris.
Oh.
I mean, Jay.
Which one is he?
I'm splitting names here, but because we're talking about splitting, but just the same. You hear about these huge divorces all the time with the huge settlements and all of that.
Right.
How do these guys, they give up half of their property, half of their whatever, if they didn't have a prenup. But how do they survive? If you think about it, when you're married, you're spending all your money on all of that stuff and maybe a little bit on yourself. You give up half of your money, you're actually ahead of the game.
Well, I see what you're saying. In the long run?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, even in the short run,
yeah.
You're ahead of the game. Even if you're paying alimony or whatever else, you're still ahead of the game.
That's I don't get one. It.
No.
You'd have to explain that one to me.
Well, when you're married, you keep about, I don't know, 5%
oh,
of your money.
Oh, I'm with you now. Okay,
when
I got
split,
you. Yeah.
You keep 50% of your money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, there's a story in the news actually right now, a big one about the guy, CEO for Continental Airlines, Harold Hamm. I got it right here. He's an oil tycoon, and he was he just got divorced. He's ordered to pay $1 billion.
Oh, what now?
A billion. $995 million, actually.
She's going to be a happy lady.
There's
maybe.
A settlement for
does
her.
He have any left, or is he get? He has another half.
Anytime I see oil tycoon in front of someone's name, I assume they have
just
more
tycoon.
Than just one
yeah,
billion.
Right?
Yeah.
What do you got to do to become a tycoon? That's what I want
to
know.
Move to Texas or Oklahoma. Is that he's Oklahoma, right?
Little
something
kids
like
aspire
so, yeah.
to be
and
something. When
go
I
after
grow
the
up,
oil.
I want to be a tycoon.
A tycoon. I'm going to push my kids to do that.
I mean, people say millionaire, billionaire all the time, mm-hmm. but no, you don't say tycoon all that much. Do you?
That's a category all on its own.
Yeah.
But still, $1 billion? Is that the most expensive ever as far as the United States goes?
Yeah, hard to say. I mean, I don't see
that's
a ranking
ton
here,
of dough.
But. Sounds pretty expensive to me.
Yeah,
I heard
right?
she's now going to be on like one of the richest women's lists because of this. So,
oh, like
yeah.
a Forbes
yeah.
list?
Yeah, she'll make a list now because of this divorce.
So the one bit of advice you get out of all of this, the lesson that we learn is marry well.
Marry an oil tycoon.
Marry well or just stay poor.
Right, because you don't know any difference.
then it won't matter.
It's
it
bliss.
Doesn't make
you
happy.
You
yes.
can't miss what you want, you know, mm-hmm. what you don't have.
Because all that money comes with other problems.
Yes, yes. Money doesn't necessarily make you happy.
You think
so.
She feels bad about being on the list that when they look next to her name about how she earned her money, it's not an invention yeah. or, you know.
I slept my way to the top.
Yeah,
like that's what she. Yeah.
Hey, I bet they were married for a long time.
I'm
so,
sure.
Yeah.
At
I'm
least
sure.
3 years.
And I'm sure they were in love.
Yeah. That's Aww. Really funny.
What does a tycoon smell like?
I don't know.
Money?
There
oil?
You go.
He rolls around in it, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Scrooge McDuck?
Yes.
I smelled a raccoon one time.
You know who has a lot of money?
A raccoon.
not a tycoon, a raccoon. Thank you, Chris.
Who's got a lot of money, Phil?
Elon Musk.
He does.
You
He's
know who
the
that
guy
is, right?
behind Tesla Motors, right?
Yes.
Well, he is making some bold predictions after some brainiac at Oxford University. He is the – now, listen to this title. This is a great title. Nick Bostrom. He is the director of the Future of Humanity Institute at Oxford University.
Wow.
He wrote some, I don't know, 170-page diatribe called Superintelligence, Past Dangers and Strategies. Now, he said the probability of robots – having human-level intelligence, 90% probability by 2075.
That's
far away. I would be 90 years old.
Okay.
Okay?
But in your lifetime.
Could be. Well, with medicine and everything, yes. Okay.
Well,
yeah, but
robot,
I drink a lot and I smoke a lot and I eat a lot of fast food. So.
And a robot so will be taking care of you.
Exactly, right? With 90% of human intelligence. Well, Elon Musk says... BS. I'm going to do it in 30 years.
Oh, and he will.
And he says that he can have a robot that has 75% of human intelligence in the next 30 years. Can you imagine that?
Will it have self-awareness?
That's what they're working on right now, and that's that 15% that they can't get
or
25%.
You realize that's when it's over for the human race.
Oh,
when
it's,
robots take the
it's
world.
Skynet, just like in Terminator. They will take over, but I would say in my kids' lifetime, we will have a robot president. No, maybe not.
No,
that's a prediction.
Yeah. I think you're going to lose
maybe,
on that
maybe
one.
Not that, maybe not that far. But, you know, we'll have, like, robot teachers, robot drivers. We'll have, like, in Demolition Man with the taxi driver. It's a robot.
Mm-hmm. Robot companions.
Well, they are working on the cars that just drive themselves, so that would count as a robot.
Exactly. You see, everything will just be digitized. And basically, this is what's cool. What Elon Musk says versus what the Brainiac says, because the Brainiac just focuses on what we're developing and how we're going to develop a superhuman robot or a super intelligent robot. Elon Musk says, well, the world is getting dumber as the days go by.
Yep.
I was going to say, depending on where you put the robot, it might be like 100% as smart as a human, depending on what city, state, country.
Exactly.
Yeah,
well,
75% is just basis.
Here's some something to back up what Elon Musk says about us getting dumber. There's a new study. And I don't know what this is. Johns Hopkins. Smart guys in Maryland, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the University of Nebraska. They know what to do with the farm animals out there. The new study found that 44% of people might be carrying around a virus that makes them dumber.
Yeah, I know a few of those people.
That explains a lot.
I'm sure we do.
You know, it's a virus that used to only affect algae. So if you have any friends who are a little smarter than algae, this explains it. But this new study found that same virus in humans, and those people did worse on intelligence tests than people without the virus. So now researchers are trying to figure out how we got it and how to fight it, and perhaps just how dumb we're getting and how quickly.
They were probably dumb to begin with and ate the algae.
What's it called? What'd they name it? I have to know.
Al?
Oh.
No, I don't know. I'll look it up.
That old Al disease.
Yeah.
That's better terrible. Get tested for it right away.
Yeah.
All right. So when you run a marathon, do you ever, if you've ever run a race, any kind of a race or a marathon, whatever it is, do you ever think, hey, you know what? I could cut across that field and I could beat everybody. Wait till you hear what happened. Chris has this story next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends, and of course today is Veterans Day, and we are so thankful for our freedoms here in these United States of America, and for all of those who have fought, and many have died, paid the ultimate price to protect those freedoms. Lieutenant Colonel Tim Collier has served in the U.S. Army 19 years. He was deployed to Afghanistan, Iraq, to the Horn of Africa. He and his family have lived in Germany, Georgia, Fort Bragg, North Carolina, now Colorado Springs, where he's working in an anti-terrorism capacity. And Lieutenant Colonel Collier, thank you very much for your service, sir, and welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
You know what? I want to learn a little bit about you. Tell us about yourself. Do you come from a military family?
Well, as a matter of fact, I do. My father graduated from the Naval Academy in 1964. My brother graduated from Virginia Military Institute in 91, entered the Navy. He's still in the Navy out at Hawaii right now with Pacific Command, and I decided to kind of follow that road too, graduated from VMI in 95, joined the Army shortly thereafter, and here we are now. A lot has changed in the last 19 years, that's certainly for sure.
I'll say, in the military and in the way we fight our battles and our wars around the world, and I want to get into that a little bit with you in a moment, but what's it like raising kids in your situation?
Well, very interesting. On one hand, you get to take your kids to see a great many things in the world that they wouldn't necessarily get to see if you had a career that kept you in one place for a great amount of time. But on the other hand, you have to ask a lot of them as well. We've picked up and moved about every 3 years since this started, and they make friends, and we have to go on, and the friends have to go on in other directions, and they catch up on the Xbox Live and whatever other internet stuff to do. And
that's cool.
And that's something that, you know, I thank God for the technology, because that's something that I didn't ever get to do. When we moved, we didn't move that many times when I was growing up. You more or less said goodbye, and maybe you'd call them once, and that's about it. But, Dave, I think it's on the balance. I have to say that it has been a little tough for the kids from time to time, but I think they've had some really great life experiences, too, that not a lot of other kids get. And I think that probably about all military kids to some extent.
Yeah. Does the name Army Brats hold water with your kids?
a little bit. I mean, they and the funny thing is so many of their friends are service brats, too. It's just not we just don't seem to it's just a way of life, I guess.
Yeah. Are we doing all that we can to honor our military personnel in terms of housing, benefits, job training, medical care, you know, the whole list?
Well, considering that it's a huge, the Department of Defense runs a very, very large, you know, responsibility. There's 425 servicemen in the Army alone, Air Force, Navy, Marines. I don't have those numbers right at the top of my head, but I think a lot of effort has definitely been made to make sure that everybody gets what they need. But sometimes, of course, it's hard to balance the demands of running the service over the last 10 years of getting everything done we'd like to get done. But I think that on the whole, it's probably better than what it was like when my father was in through the 70s and 80s. I mean, I think [S2] Yeah. [S1] A lot of effort has been definitely made to... But, you know, it's the federal government. Every now and again, you find things that you think could just be done a little bit better.
Right. Yeah.
Every now and again? Come on. Yeah. No, I'm kidding.
So approaching 20 million veterans in the United States, and an interesting fact, and got this from actually CNN got this from the Census Bureau, close to 40,000 veterans of World War II, Korean War, and the Vietnam War are still living and out there. And, of course, with 9.3 million veterans over the age of 65, there's a lot of care and attention that is required, and hopefully we're doing our level best to take care of our veterans, because you guys do so much for us.
Yes.
What should civilians know about today's soldier that maybe they weren't or aren't readily aware of?
I think that this is going to sound like paid Army advertisement, but honestly, I think they're some of the best people the country has to offer right now. If you... or your listeners come across someone who has gotten out of the military for whatever capacity, and since the advent of the all-volunteer force, which, you know, was sometime in the 80s when they kind of stopped the draft, people come into this because they want to make the world better, and they see that the military is a place where they can do that. There is a lot of drive and initiative and enthusiasm, and a lot of people that are willing to sacrifice a lot to achieve those goals. And for a lot of reasons, I can't speak for all of them, they exit the service, and I think they still carry that with them.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've been stopped by older guys, the Vietnam era vets, who stop me if they see me in uniform and say, hey, thank you for your service. And I was in, you know, Vietnam, or I was in Korea or whatever. And it's really humbling, I think, to have a guy who probably fought a much harder campaign than I did tell me that.
Yeah.
Quite honestly.
How big of a problem is this post-traumatic stress syndrome that we hear so much about?
I think it depends from person to person, but it's a very, very difficult thing to wrap your arms around, because it has a lot to do with how the individual person deals with it.
Yeah, I don't want to diminish in any way what anybody is going through, but I always wonder about just the horrible battle scene visions that were probably locked indelibly in the memories of World War II veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Who came back from whatever they came back, those who stormed Normandy and other places where it was just horrendous, death everywhere. And there was really never any public talk about the kind of post-battlefield stress that any of these guys were going through. They seemed to just kind of bottle it up, not talk about it, and go on with their lives. How are we different?
Well, I think that it's a much better approach to acknowledge that there are some issues people grapple with and provide the avenues of approach to allow them to work through those issues and set people's minds and heads back at ease and get them moving down the right path in life again.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. It certainly does. It's a different world for sure in our expectations and sensibilities. If you could stick around with us for a little bit, I want to talk to you again because you talked about how things have changed in the military in 19 years. In fact, the battles we fight have changed quite a bit and the way we do it and how complicated it's become. And I'd also like to get your perspective with your anti-terrorism background on the news this week that we may have either killed or wounded the leader of ISIS, which tends to be the focus of our war on terror right now. Get your thoughts on that and maybe some final words of wisdom that you might have for young men and women who might consider enlisting in the military. Will you hang out for us for our next segment?
Yeah, no problem.
Lieutenant Colonel Tim Collier on this Veterans Day. 19 years with the U.S. Army. He's back with us next on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Happy Veterans Day to you, and thank you for your service. If you are indeed a member of the military, active or otherwise, I'm Phil Hewlett. You're listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. Aaron Myers, Jay Campidonia, Chris Martin are here, as well as Lieutenant Colonel Tim Collier, 19 years in the U.S. Army. He's in Colorado Springs these days in the anti-terrorism unit there. And 19 years, I imagine things have changed quite a bit on the battlefield, what with the rise of Al-Qaeda and the attack here on 9/11 and our response and just how complicated it is with cells related to Al-Qaeda and other terror groups all over the world. How much change has there been within the military in terms of, I guess, where we put our personnel and our strategy?
Well, Phil, I'm actually at what's called U.S. Northern Command right now, which is the portion of the Department of Defense, which is responsible for North America, Canada, and parts of Mexico and the Bahamas. And what the work I'm doing there right now is very much attempting to kind of come to grips and analyze what is threatening the country and then try and ensure that the right steps across a broad range of DOD and federal government law enforcement agencies are doing what they need to do. So my and for me, this is a bit of a different position. Most of the work that I've done in the military since 9/11 has been civil-military cooperation and disaster response and humanitarian assistance type of things, which have a really important role in making sure that people in countries that are not as possibly well-run as ours, that, you know, you can take that any way you want, are have trust and confidence in the people that govern them and therefore will be a bit more resistant to the radical ideologies that we find prevalent in the world today. But to answer your question more specifically, the entire DOD enterprise, the entire country is kind of trying to come to grips with this. And there is, of course, we see on the news every day, we see the actions and the responses that go on. But to me, it almost seems like the Cold War kind of all over again. It is it will be a very long time before this entire proposition that we face in the world today, represented most clearly by ISIS or ISIL, is really dealt with. It's a very old question wrapped up in the world histories between the states in the Middle East and the way the West and Europe approaches them. And it challenges, in many cases, our notions of how we govern ourselves and how we think other people around the world should govern themselves.
Now, whereas the Cold War was largely defined by borders, there were spies infiltrating, of course, all over the world. But in this case, there are no borders, are there?
There are no borders. You're right. Absolutely right. And what one of the things that have been really, you know, disturbing to see is to watch on the news and see the the inspired attackers who read the fundamentalist ideology on the internet and decide, yeah, this makes sense, this works, I'm going to go do something about it. And that is actually, I think, a real scary notion that it's going to take a long time for us to, again, figure out how to chiefly combat that. And I just want to also point out that our federal law enforcement partners are, you know, spend quite a lot of time working on this, and it's actually a really, really, really a difficult problem set. And it's you never know where to look next or where things are going.
Do you think we, as Americans, get hung up on the religious aspects of this enemy as opposed to perhaps what we should be maybe more focused on is their political aspirations?
Well, the problem is for the radical Islamist or the radical guy, those two are one and the same. They're the religion and the politics. They're very, very, very closely intertwined. And the notion of the separation of church and state is something that simply doesn't occur in the more radical folks that we're dealing with. They are absolutely, and I of course I can't speak for the entire federal government on this, but it appears to me from my perspective that there's a very definite drive to recreate the world to fit the teachings that are ongoing there. So I think religion has a very large part to play there, and not the person that wants to practice their religion peacefully, the person that takes on radicalism is the only way forward in this situation.
Yeah. It's difficult to wrap one's head around it, and it takes a lot of military advisors and planners and strategery to figure it all out, and it's probably going to take decades to do that. And in the meantime, there are young people coming up who are considering enlisting, talking to a recruiter, and getting into one of the branches of the armed forces. Do you have any words of wisdom for them now that you have 19 years of perspective behind you?
Well, first and foremost, and I've joked about this for years, so I'm glad you're giving me an opportunity to say this, is make sure you can type and make sure you can read and write really well. As you go forward, no matter what cool things you think you're going to be doing, there will come a time when your supervisor, your boss, whoever, sits you down and says, now I need this, I need something written, I need something produced, I need something done. So the education aspect is just huge. And even though the military offers a lot of fascinating stuff to do, a lot of things that everything that the movies sometimes depict us doing, somebody somewhere is doing that at least once. but it's still, I think, an excellent choice for anybody, even today, to volunteer to serve. And I think that it's an experience that will pay dividends for you on down the road of life.
Gotcha.
So I would encourage anybody to do so. But how many times I've looked at my friends and said, gosh, if I could go back to ROTC training and if somebody told me I'd be doing this much writing, I would have maybe majored in English.
Yeah, right, and there's a big need for those. Lieutenant Colonel Tim Collier, 19 years, U.S. Army, thank you so much for spending a couple of segments with us here on the program today on this Veterans Day, and we wish you and your family all the best.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me. And on behalf of everybody that is not being interviewed on the phone, and I just want to point out that this time last year I was in Afghanistan, and there's still folks out there right now. And we just thank you very much on their behalf for the support and the kind words.
Thank you, sir. Continued good wishes for you and all of the other men and women in the armed forces out there fighting for our freedoms. We appreciate what you do. Thanks.
You too. Thanks so much, Phil.
All right. So there you go. That was good. It's always good to hear that perspective, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking before the show. We all have military in our family, correct?
Yes.
So, like, to talk to some guy who's dedicated his entire life
right.
to the military,
yeah.
it just doesn't happen that often. So kudos to him.
Yeah. My dad, Korean War. How about you guys?
World War II and NAM.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, I had a grandpa in World War II.
Yeah, two grandpas in World War II and an uncle who was a little bit later. I think he was over around Iraq in the Navy, but he was a troublemaker.
A troublemaker? What? Did he get court-martialed or what?
No, but he was in the brig a lot, Yes.
What's it like in the brig?
I don't know. He doesn't really like to talk about it, but yeah, he spent some time in there.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, my grandpa will tell some stories, and a lot of them have to do with, you know, whenever they'd come to port, because he's traveled all over the world, and whenever they'd come to port, there'd be this area, and I can't remember the name he uses for the zone, but it's like, you can't go into this area because this is the downtown, so to speak. It's where you go to have fun. But, you know, he'd be like, this is what our captain would tell us in order to say, that's where it is. You're not supposed to go there, but in case you're wondering.
Yeah, you know, they don't want you going in and getting screwed, glued, and tattooed, right?
Right, yeah.
There you go.
But then
well
in a
done.
Way, they do. You know, you gotta, you're out there. You got to
think that's Navy terminology, is it not?
You would be correct, sir.
Yeah. Now, somebody else who gets in trouble a lot is our travel guy, Gary Warner, and he's actually, we'll be traveling while we speak to him next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports a Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports a Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends, and all I can say is yum. Around the table we go, starting with you, Jay. We've all found delightful things to eat.
Yes, and who doesn't love a churro? Well, forget about that, because now there is the Oreo-flavored churro.
Oh,
this comes from J&J Snack Foods over in the UK across the pond.
Hey.
And they're going to try to put the Oreo churro in fast food chains around the world, around the country. And get this, it comes with a side of Oreo cream filling dipping sauce.
Food fight.
Gonna be good.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah. All right. How about you, Aaron? You have something equally delightful?
I have something just as tasty if you live in Brussels, Belgium, and you go to school at a university there. They're actually going to be one of the first commercial kitchens to offer exotic cuisine based on insects. So you can have the buffalo worm burger and worm nuggets.
Worm nuggets.
I didn't know worm had nuggets.
These ones do.
All right. And how about you, Chris? Brutal. Did you find us anything delightful?
Sure. Yeah. Well, after you're done having all that stuff, then you can wash it down with PepsiCo's new product, Doritos.
What's a Dorito?
Well, they're like making the name. They're making Dorito-flavored Mountain Dew.
That's gross.
They're performing taste tests as we speak, and you might find it on your shelves here soon.
Yours is disgusting, Aaron, and yours is plain gross, Chris.
Right.
I'm sorry.
I agree.
So you'd rather
have
a worm burger than a Dorito?
Yes.
Okay.
And
you
win also. I have nothing. I agree. But I'm going to reel us back into Veterans Day once again, and our travel guy, Gary Warner, is here with us. And Gary, what I didn't know about you and your career, but I've been told by our executive producer, Mike Stark, that actually you were somewhat of an embedded reporter for the Orange County Register for a while. What'd you do? Did you travel with the Marines when they left Camp Pendleton and follow them along?
That's correct. My job for 5 years prior to being the travel editor was the military reporter, and I went with troops from El Toro and Tustin and Camp Pendleton, all Marine bases, to places like Korea and then on down to Saudi Arabia for the startup of Operation Desert Storm.
Wow. How about that? So you reported, you took a lot of pictures. Were you ever embedded in such a way to where you were almost taking fire?
No. In fact, I like to tell people my favorite story is that I was sent to Saudi Arabia and we were given gas masks and tents and sleeping bags and everything like that. And we arrived in the middle of the night and they drove and drove and drove and they pulled up in front of an empty Holiday Inn. And that's where we stayed for the duration of the that was our headquarters.
Yeah.
This Holiday Inn.
So you ignored the no vacancy sign. It was all a,
right.
was all a hoax.
Well, it was very vacant. Pretty much everybody had left. We knew things were getting hairy when they went from waiter service in the morning for breakfast to a buffet, because all of the busboys were basically getting out of that area because of the scuds.
Okay, so here's the big question. Did you ever meet the Scud Stud?
The Scud Stud. Yes, actually, I did. What's his name?
Was that Martin Fletcher? Or was that another guy? A reporter?
Another guy. Because he also went on to do travel stuff. But I met him on a plane once.
He had good hair.
Yeah, he had great hair. But his name escapes me. But, yeah, I met him on a plane a couple years later, and we talked about the war.
Yeah. All right. Well, today, on this Veterans Day, you're out traveling. You're actually moving as we go.
Yes, I am. I'm in my car.
Where are you going? Is it related to what we're talking about?
You know, we stylish, you know, travel writer types have all sorts of choices. So I thought the best thing to do would be to go pick up my daughter at her friend's house.
Oh.
A few miles away. So
how about that? Lovely. But I bet you have some advice for us to some places that we should consider visiting in light of what our veterans have done for us. And what do you have in mind?
You know, this is a very interesting year, Phil, and there's a lot of anniversaries. It's the 100th anniversary of the beginning of World War One. We're rolling through the 150th anniversary of the Civil War. It's the equivalent of 1864 now. 70th anniversary of D-Day, and the 50th anniversary of the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which brought the U.S. into the war in Vietnam.
Right.
So I thought I'd pick one place in from those four wars that I thought were sort of evocative of the war, but also maybe some place that people didn't necessarily know about. So let's start out with the Civil War. Most people think that the war ended at Appomattox with Grant and Lee surrendering there. The famous photo, or not photo, but the famous paintings of Lee handing his sword to Grant, and Grant giving it back to him. But actually, there were still over 100,000 Confederate troops in the field. And it wasn't until a few days later, in April 26th, at a place called Bennett's Farm in central North Carolina, in Durham, near the university area, down there, that Joseph Johnson disobeyed orders from Jefferson Davis and surrendered 90,000 troops, effectively ending the war.
Hmm.
So it's sort of a forgotten chapter that, you know, that people think the war was over when there was still a big fighting force out there.
Yeah, and so that's a great place to visit?
Great place to visit because, you know, unlike Appomattox, it's a lot of people don't know about it. It's a state historic park. It's on the National Register of Historic Places, but you go there and you can a lot of times find yourself alone or with just a few other people you know, in the farm and the farm buildings there. And you can imagine these, you know, thousands and thousands of troops in the fields around there.
Is it a good time to go when they do the whole reenactment thing, or do they do it there?
You know, I don't know if they reenact it there. I doubt in North Carolina they probably reenact the biggest surrender of.
Yeah, right. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Good point.
It would be a big one, but no, I think, you know, April 26th, when the surrender was, that's a beautiful time of year in North Carolina before it gets too hot.
By the way, the Scud Stud, Arthur Kent.
Arthur Kent. That's right.
And he's a travel reporter now. Is that what you say?
Well, travel stuff when he left, I think it was NBC, and he was doing basically travel shows with his own company and trying to market him. And I didn't see him, so I guess it didn't go too well.
Yeah. Now, are the Civil War spots in the United States the best, or some of the Revolutionary War spots equally fun?
Oh, I think the Civil War spots are the best because I think people almost immediately started memorializing the Civil War. I mean, Gettysburg National Battlefield was named before the end of the war. There's a lot less development in many of the Civil War spots, although the ones in Virginia have gotten developed out. But a place like Shiloh is just amazing, the way that they've kept that place looking like it did way, way back. For the Revolutionary War, I love the areas around Concord and Lexington up in Massachusetts. they remain remarkably looking like they did at that time. You can go down that road and feel like what it must have been like for those British soldiers trying to get out of Concord and being picked off one by one by the Minutemen along the road as they went back there.
How about the field in Bennington where they have that monument there?
Yeah. I mean the Green Mountain Boys, I think.
Exactly. In Vermont.
There's a lot of great spots. It's just the Civil War really got into the memorialization thing. It's weird because you'll see these huge marble monuments that were erected for the Union soldiers in the 1870s, 1880s. It isn't until like the 1920s when you start to see these pink granite memorials that were erected by the Confederate veterans. It took them a while, to kind of get off the mat and be able to have pride in among themselves about what they did in terms of the battlefield.
Right, gotcha.
Not so much what they fought for.
How about you? Are you a military veteran yourself?
I am not a military veteran myself. I graduated from high school the year after they ended the Vietnam draft.
So all right, we're about the same range there, because I missed the draft by 2 years. So there you go.
I respect military folks very much, but I'm glad that I wasn't forced to make a decision on that. I think it works best when you can volunteer.
Yeah.
Although I worry about the sharing of the burden. It seems like the same folks, the same classes are always the ones who are fighting and dying.
Yeah, interesting perspective there from you, Gary Warner, our travel guy, and we'll talk to you again next week. Where do you think you're going to be headed?
Sounds great, Phil. Actually, I just bought tickets to go to the North Shore of Oahu for the Speedway Surf Contest in December. And I'm just hoping for big, nasty, gnarly storms to, get those 25, 30-foot faces.
All right, Gary Warner, aloha, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hey. Cheers yourself, guy.
All right, very good. Hey, one more thing. He was mentioning battlefields, Chris. Isn't there a marathon named after a battlefield, something like that?
There is. It's in Georgia, actually, the state of Georgia. And Tabitha Hamilton, she's 31 years old, she won the Chickamauga Battlefield Marathon in Georgia. And while officials say her 2-hour, 55-minute finishing time is really good, she clocked in at 2 hours at the halfway mark. So the 55 minutes to finish the other half of the marathon was a world record that she had set. And they said that based on her previous marathon times, not possible.
2 hours to do the first half.
And then 55.
Less than an hour to do the second.
And
she had Red Bull.
Equal halves, you know.
So she had a pallet full of Red Bull.
Yes.
Did she catch a ride?
Something, or cut through town. She must have done something. They disqualified her. She maintains that she's innocent, but they're
Kenyan?
Saying there's no way. No, no.
Oh, then it's not possible.
It's like 5'5", 31-year-old Caucasian woman.
Yeah. Sometimes it takes a while for your legs to get warmed up.
I guess so. Hey, we love your comments. Click contact at philhewlettandfriends.com. Leave us a note. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson, our assistant in training, Richard Freifield. For Aaron Myers, Jake Campidonia, Chris Martin, I'm Phil. Talk to you next time on Phil Hewlett and Friends. I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports a Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports a Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Ports a Call Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.